You know, how does one handle pressure? How does one handle situations that are challenging when there are great opportunities, but there are also specific challenges and difficulties? And we all face different parts of our lives, certainly this time and others. And I found that one of the key ways is emunah. I know it sounds very basic, but the sense that, we try our best, but it's all in Hashem's hands, has, for me, been really helpful in going about every day with a positive attitude and with a sense of belief in the future. You know, Hashem Yazor. It may not everything will work out. Not everything will be easy. But the sense of a relationship with Hashem and the connection with Hashem to me has been throughout my life, a crucial pillar relationship that has sustained me and carried me. And I think that while it's basic, it's something to be explored. Which is, what does that mean, a relationship with Hashem? How do we think about Hashem? How do we even imagine Hashem? Is he a he? Is he a she? How do you imagine Hashem? Is like how we think about things, the metaphors that we have in our heads, actually shape our relationships and our connections and it'll shape our lives. And what do you think about? Like, is there an image? Is it something old or young? I'm curious. Like, what do you think about when you think about Hashem? What do you think about? What image comes to your mind? What pops in your head?
Well, really, no image.
No image?
No.
No image comes to you. That's great. That's interesting. I'm saying that no image comes to you, meaning it's, Alana, it's great, Sarah. Yeah.
Some guy with a beard, no, like it's like I'm imagining a cloud image.
Yeah.
Like clouds, like, you look at the clouds, a guy sitting on a throne, and just like looking down. But that's kind of like close, so like higher up.
Yeah, something very high up, old.
Old beard.
Beard, male.
Male.
And a cop on a throne.
Also, do you mind if I think about
some food? No, please. Yeah, it's all. What do you think about when you think about that? Yeah.
I think, I don't know.
Ariel?
If it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's when I think of it now, I don't know exactly if like it's as easy to conjure up an image now that isn't reflected by what you're told as a kid.
Yeah.
But I think that at least what I thought when I was in like preschool, middle school, is probably like clouds surrounding a chair. I don't know what. Chair and not like a folding chair kind of thing. I don't know if I thought so much of it like a throne or what it looked like, and then like a hovering crown on top, but I didn't think of like a being in
the theme of being
chair.
What about a characteristic is happy, angry, loving, disciplinarian? Yeah,
I feel like I think of God as like very serious, but then
serious?
Like I feel like I've learned a lot of like things about how like God is always so happy, so then it's kind of like shifted it to like being like always really serious, but like he's also really like smiling and happy.
I mean, when you were younger, the image that's very important when you said Ariel, so she just remind me of person.
Megan,
when you were younger, it was Hashem serious, but you've learned. When did you start learning Hashem is happy? What age?
Like more recently.
Yeah. So that Hashem is a happier sense. Yeah.
So I think when I was younger, I thought of Hashem as like a king, like an overall king, like ruling over the world. But now I think of him more as like a father, like more like close connection.
That's great. And again, male, meaning the king, to father. King to father. Yeah,
I think it also depends on what context I'm thinking of him in. Like when I'm saying different tefillot, when I'm saying Hashivinu Avinu, then I picture a fatherly figure. Mm-hmm. But when I think of a more, like, we even have this balance within the same tefillot, like Avinu Malkeinu, then I kind of picture both at the same time, like also a more powerful kingly figure, but always protective. Like that's, I would say, the main characteristic.
Always protective.
Yeah.
Nice. And you're saying that it's shaped by the words that you say.
Yeah.
Your place of mind is shaped by the words that you say, by where the tefillah directs. What about like omniscient, omnibenevolent? You think about that at all? In contrast, or omnipotent? You know, could God pick up? Could God do evil? How about that? That's one of the classic philosophical verses. Could God do evil? What would you say? That? How would you answer that? Can God do evil? Yeah.
Maybe like what we perceive as evil, but it might not be like ultimately evil.
So is that a, but God, can God, let's say he says, I want to do evil. Can he do that? Your name is Ramami?
Ne'ima. I guess I would say like, I don't know, I guess it's rephrased because I guess he doesn't really do evil, but we perceive it as an evil thing to do.
So is that a limitation on his omnipotence, that he can't do evil?
I don't know.
Can he create a rock that he can't pick up? Isn't this some kind of question? Yeah.
I think that, like, there he has the ability to perform evil, but, like, for us, he doesn't perform it on us. Like, he's so gracious to us.
Right.
We have to view how everything he does for us is for the better, and like we might not know now why it's the best for us because it might seem like evil, but in the end,
right. I think the reason why I mention is it's part of this question of how we think about Hashem. I think at least when I was growing, I think omnipotent, like he could do everything, was like the dominant characteristic, and omnibenevolent. You know, we've always would say it, but. But you know, what's more of the nature, or the core nature? You know, just it's a reflection. I mean, I don't have an answer to this, but it's a reflection of how we think about Hashem. You know, just part of the metaphor, or part of our, and that affects our relationship. I'll show you something inside that I think. If you think about how Am Yisrael thought of Hashem, how did the Jewish people think of Hashem? You know, and it relates to our life. So I was going to ask them to bring out Chumashim. And I looked in my notes, and I saw a source sheet that I put together 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. This has been in my folder for 18 years. I don't know why I had extra copies, but I think they're enough. Now, I used to give, when I was at the Jewish Center, as a rabbi of the Jewish Center, I used to give these pshat shiurim, these pshat-based shiurim that were very popular on the Upper West Side. I was assistant rabbi. There was like over 100 people would come. And I thought it was so creative. Afterwards, everyone does pshat. So like there's literally, I hear everything, like it's always that way. And now I think most of the things I said weren't right. But this is one of the things I think was right. So I'm actually excited about this one. Which is, if you look at the story at the end of this week's Parsha, right, after Kriyas Yamsuf, after Bnei Yisrael were saved. And it was amazing. You know, they went through the Makos, they go through Yamsuf, Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Avdo, everything is great. They believe in God, believe in Moshe. Everything is wonderful. And then immediately afterwards, Vayasa Moshe et Yisrael mi Yamsuf, Vayitzu el Midbar Shur, Vayolchu Shloshes Yamim ba Midbar, Velo Matzu Mayim. So immediately afterwards, this is the first story after Az Yashir. So Moshe, they travel, he brings them, he leads them from the Yamsuf, they go to Midbar Shur, they go 3 days in the desert, they didn't find water. They have Omar Asav, Loyachlu Lishtos Maya, Mimara, Kimarim He, Malkain Karashimo Mara. They came to Mara, they weren't able to drink the water from Mara because it was bitter, therefore they called it Mara. Vayilonu al'am al-Moshe le'mar manishe. And they murmured, the people murmured against Moshe. They said, what will we drink? Vayitzak al Hashem, vayarei Hashem eitz, vayashlecha l'mayim, v'yimtiku ha'mayim, sham sam lo choku mishpat v'sham nisa. And they cried to Hashem. Hashem showed them a stick. Moshe threw the stick into the water. This water sweetened, and there he gave them chok u'mishpat. There he gave them a statute, an ordinance, and there he tested them. Vayomer, and he said, im shemoa tishma l'kol Hashem elokecha, vayashar be'enav ta'aseh, if you listen to Hashem, and you do what's right in his eyes, vazant l'mitzvosav, and you hear his mitzvot, and you observe the mitzvot, v'shamar t'kol chukav, and you observe all of the chukim, kol amachala asher samti b'mitzrayim, lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rofecha. All of the machala, how would you translate machala? The illnesses, the diseases that I placed on Mitzrayim, I wouldn't put on you, because I am Hashem that heals you. Okay, first story out of the gate. Now, what do you think about this story? Does this surprise you, or does it not surprise you? What do you think?
So I'd say, I mean, we kind of started off this conversation talking about, like, how we view Hashem.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was B'nai Israel's first introduction as a nation to, I guess, this concept of, like, in addition to Hashem, like, loving them and taking them out of Mitzrayim and, you know, doing all these things for them, there's also, like, a certain amount of responsibility and obligation that they have as the Jewish people. So, like, we're introducing these, like, chok u'mishpat now, and
it's
also,
great.
Like, how, like, you have to do good, and if you don't do good, like, Hashem's going to be upset at you, and you have a responsibility in addition to all the benefits of, like, being the chosen nation.
That's great. So Elisheva's pointing out, it's the first time, after Yom Suf, you hear chok u'mishpat, right? There's some concept of mitzvot with matzah, with Karban Pesach, that they've heard in Mitzrayim. This is the first time they come in and they hear chok u'mishpat. And the whole idea of, in this case, maybe reward and punishment. Okay, great. Does this story surprise you, or it doesn't surprise you? What do you think? Is it bad that they murmured? Is it not bad that they murmured? Yeah.
I mean, I think it's
Megan.
Really, yeah. I think it's really surprising. Like, they just went through, like, all this amazing stuff, and then they're like, oh, how is God going to do this? Like, you just saw God can do anything. Like, why would you even have the question in your mind that, like, where are you going to get water from? Like, of course, God will give you water.
Why would they even have the question? Right? They just saw the Makos. They just saw Kriyas Yam Suf. Why would they even have the question? How is it that right away after Az Yashir, and they sang V'aminim B'Hashem Moshe Avdo, immediately, all of a sudden, they're talking about, you know, what's going on here? Okay, great question. Yeah, Alana?
I mean, yeah, there's that one aspect where they just saw all these miracles. The other aspect is that they are human. Like, you know, someone's struggling for parnasa, and you know Hashem can make anything happen. But you're still struggling, you're still nervous, but, you know, you see miracles where they find the dollars, the wall, whatever. Like, you're still human, you still have that little bit of, like, doubt. And Hashem, like, if you didn't have that doubt, then there would be no point.
Right.
Because, like, yeah, everything's going to be okay. Like, I don't need to work, I don't need to do anything. Like, I don't need to work on anything in my life, because it's all fine. Like, no, that's the human aspect of it. Like, you have to.
I mean, there's a human element, but you're formulating as a human element of doubt. And that's true. And also, I mean, think about their position. Like, where were, what just happened? How many days did they go?
3 days.
3 days without water. They're in the desert. Right? 3 days without water in the desert? Like, you could get worried. So it's very human to go 3 days in the desert, to be uncertain what's going to happen, and you get worried. Yeah, sir.
Also, they just uprooted a life that they've been living for hundreds of years.
That's
and
true.
The one thing that they need is stability and water.
Yeah, they've just talked about that change. Meaning they knew, look, it's not a good life to be a slave. But they knew, you know, where their food was coming. They knew their schedule. They knew their routine. They knew what was going to happen when they woke up in the morning. Right? They knew they had a life. They managed it for, you know, long periods of time. This is totally new. And they don't have water. Yeah, that's it.
Also, I think it's
Yeah,
remind me your name again.
Carmiel.
Carmiel, yeah.
I was going to say that it uses the Lashon of Vayalonu.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, yeah, they're complaining, but it's not like Mordu or whatever. Like,
great
it's not
point. Look at the comparison. Thank you, Carmiel. It's a great point. There's clearly a comparison in this story and the story that happens, the third story after they come out of Yam Suf. If you look at the bottom section, that was apparently my shiur 18 years ago. But if you look at the words, it's similar. Whereas Ein Mayim L'shto Ta'am, there was no water for the people to drink. But what word does it say there? Vayarev Ha'am in Moshe. They fought against Moshe. Here, they're not fighting. It's Vayalonu. Afterwards, after the man, that's a whole other question, but after the man, then they started fighting. Vayomer, they said, Tnu lanu mayim v'nishteh. Give us water to drink. Not manishteh. What will we drink? Which is, you could say, I mean, it's a very normal question to ask. It's 3 days. Manishteh, what will we drink? But they don't ask that. Here they ask it, but later on it's a much more, you know, militant kind of posture. And that does have Lamazali Tani Mitzrayim Lamitoti Vat Banaim. Why did you bring us out of Mitzrayim to kill us and my children by thirst? So there you get it's a whole different feel. So Vayalonu doesn't have this, Carmiel's point, doesn't have the same, you know, militancy. Okay, other thoughts about this? Yeah.
Also, they didn't necessarily know how miraculous the desert was going to be. And if the Yom Suf split, that was a miracle. But maybe that would be the last miracle they witnessed.
Great point. Remind me your name?
Daphne,
great point. Meaning, how did they know what life was going to be like in this new reality? Right? They've been seeing the miracles before. And now, you know, for example, when they go to Israel, it's going to switch. You know, the man's going to stop and they're going to have to live according to the Teva, according to nature. You know, what's going to happen in this desert state? It's a great point. It's really uncertain. Yeah. Can you use that, Ariel?
I think that they also, just like they've seen the miracles in the past, they also saw how hard it could be even with Hashem on their side. Like, they were slaves and Hashem did put them into slavery. So how are they to know that, like, they are going to get something to drink? So I think it's normal and also human, and I think, like, not forgetting Hashem, they're recognizing that Hashem did put them through hard times in the past, and how are they to know when this is going to end?
Right. I mean, it would be hard for them to know, especially in this new reality, you know, when is this going to end? So all of this is right. I want to add one more layer to this, which begins fleshing out some of our conversation from before. Up until now, the Jewish people had only one experience of Hashem. Hashem was a punisher. Hashem afflicted pain. In fact, when they sang their great song to Hashem, Az Yashir Moshe, what do they consider Hashem? What do they call Hashem and Az Yashir? Hashem Ish Milchama, Hashem Shemo. What do they know about God? They know the Makos. They know he split the Yam Suf and he killed all the Egyptians. Right? Their image of God, of this God of their forefathers, okay, is one of afflicting, punishing. He's an Ish Milchama, and he's the most powerful Ish Milchama. Right? And that's what the Mako showed. Each Maka showed that Hashem was in total control. And that the God of the Egyptians were nothing, and Hashem was in total control. You know, once when I was at the Jewish Center, I had this idea that each of the Makot were, I was after, I think there was an exhibit in the Met on the Egyptian gods. And it occurred to me that the Makot were actually, each one was against a different Egyptian god. So coincidentally, like it was during these weeks, an Egyptologist called me. It's a big coincidence. And I said, well, now that I have you on the phone, and he explained to me how each of the makot, you know, reflected another deity of the Egyptians, whether it's Yamsuf or Paro is the god of the Bechor, or, you know, Ra, the sun god, and Choshech, like each of the makot afflict, and Hashem was showing that he can destroy each of your gods. Like, there is only one God, Hashem, and all of your deities are nothing. Elohei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim, the Pasuk says. What does that mean? To the gods of Egypt, I will do judgment. Meaning he was showing, and each one, that they're nothing. And Hashem is Ish Milchama. He can destroy them all. So they knew that about Hashem. What didn't they know about Hashem? That he was also Ani Hashem Rofecha. I am the God that heals. You can take a stick, and I don't just have the power to turn it into blood and destroy everything in the Yam, but you can take a stick and throw it in bitter waters and I will make it sweet. This little story is crucial in the history of the Jewish people. Because it was their first exposure to a different kind of Hashem, a different face of Hashem, and a different relationship with Hashem. That kol ha-machala ashesamti b'mitzrayim lo asem alacha, I will not put the machala that I did to Mitzrayim on you. Ki ani Hashem rofecha, because I am the God that heals you. And for the first time, they talk about mitzvot, chok, mishpat, which are vehicles for relationships and boundaries and directions and guidance. How to come close and how one moves far. This story, like if you look at Az Yashir, it's such a wonderful moment, but it's a very narrow image. It's Hashem Ish Milchama, Hashem Shema. This is the balance of Ani Hashem Rofecha. And this is, you know, you talk about our education. I think that so often, you know, when we're younger, and it could be that educationally this is wise, but we the image of Hashem is very much the disciplinarian, like a stern melech, not a protective one, right? Who's like catching you, you know, and punishing. You know, there's a fearfulness, and I would say I think it's generational. I see, certainly in this generation, people have a much happier sense of Hashem. I don't know if I had that when I was your age. You know, I think it was more of the fear and the disciplinarian. But I could be wrong. Like, I don't want to be overly generalizing. I remember when my son, who was in high school, said to me, you know, how could Hashem punish me? He loves me too much. I'm like, wow, I never thought that when I was in high school. Like, how amazing to say something like that. Of course, maybe he was just trying to get away with things. I don't know. I don't really know. But like that idea of Hashem loves me so much, you know, is like, that's so amazing. Like that feeling. Like the Avinu Malkenu, and both, I love that both protective. I think that's amazing. You know, but that sense of Ani Hashem Rofecha, that's what Hashem, I'm the omnipotent, I'm the benevolent. You know, where does it, you know, he's both, but where does that lean in who you think of Hashem? You know, it changes, like where you land on that line, you know, is transformative. Yeah, sorry.
I guess I would say that it might also depend on how you view punishment. I mean, if you're viewing punishment as just a way to, like, hit you when you're bad, versus, like, as part of a constructive love.
Nice.
Which is...
Yeah, and which is true. Right. I'm saying as a parent, there's no, you know, when you're punishing your child, you love them
right.
profoundly and deeply, and there's no anger, you know, it's, and it shouldn't be, there shouldn't be any anger. You know, it should all be out of love and guidance. You know, so I think what Sarah's pointing out is like it's a false choice. You know, I was saying, you know, it's Hashem Yishmo Chama, Hashem, it's one. You know, and that's the protective image that I really think that Avinu Malkeinu is two, but it's one. You know, and it all... It's all how we think of. It's in our heads. Now, I think, going on what Ayala talked about, the psukim that you say in Tefillah, I think the question of when is fascinating. Because when, I'm just telling you my experiences, it depends the times in your. It depends on the day. Like on Yom Kippur, you might have one kind of thing. You might, you know, on Sukkot there might be another feeling. Than during the week, like I don't know if there's a dominant. Like I think this isn't one. Like these are shifting. It shifts. It's not that Hashem shifts. Hashem is the. It's our. Mindset. You know, Hashem is the presence that's there for us. But what we need, or what we're thinking, you know, could shift.
So I think I was thinking about this before, is that what it's very comparable to is like when you have a new teacher in a school or you're entering a new grade, the teacher often comes in on the first day and it's very, very strict. And for the first week, they're very, very strict. And you see that their persona as someone who's very, very strict.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of weeks go by, from the amount of actions that they do, you're able to see that this isn't only their one limited they don't have one, it's not one perspective, but rather they're able to do, they have all these other attributes. And then you're able to formulate, then you're able to actually formulate different opinions on them based on the given actions that they did.
Right, that's great. Meaning as you broaden your experiences, you can broaden your understanding. And I think, you know, speaking about experiences, meaning at what point do we become thinking people that we even think about these things? You know, is it when we're 7 years old? Is it when we become bat mitzvah? Is it when we go to Israel for the year? Or is it when we come to Stern College? Like, at what point, like, do we start considering the realm of experiences that enrich and deepen our understanding of Hashem and our relationship with God? You know, even before this talk, when I was thinking about what we're going to talk about, I kept on saying in my head, our relationship with him, with the capital H. And then I was really curious if any of you have any picture of Hashem as a her. Like the Ema Shechina. There's also, you know, there's metaphors in our Mesorah as Ema Shechina. But nobody talked about maternal. And it all shapes. Or nobody spoke about Baal, like your husband. Saying there are also there are husband-wife images. So how we grow up and taught to think about, I mean, it's rich in terms of the Mesorah and what's available, you know, and what we access. And when we access that is fascinating. You know, it speaks so much about us and our culture and our rearing and our chinuch. You know, more than it speaks about Hashem, who is, you know, a singular one that we can't understand, and it's all the same. You know, so it's just, I find this as a thinking about this and living it, you know, as I said, as the what gives one stability and strength and sustenance. I'd also throw in one more question, and we'll wrap this up. We spoke about what is Hashem, when is Hashem, you know, different times. Where is Hashem? Where is Hashem in your life? Any thought about where, like literally where? You used to talk about the cloud. Is in the cloud. Where is Hashem in your life? Yeah.
I think he's there all the time, but it's where you let him in. Like, it's those experiences that you feel that you need to draw on, that connection that you enable yourself to have that.
Right. I think that's the, isn't the Rebbe Mikatz, like, God is where you let him in?
God, yeah. Found wherever you let him in.
God is where you let him in. It's beautiful. It's great. God is where you let him in. So I think in the, if you look at, again, in our Masorah, so like when you go to shul, there's a great phrase on the aron. What's the phrase that is often on an aron?
Da
lifnei mi'ata omed. Right? And the sense is that Hashem, that you're standing in front of God. Now, are you always supposed to be thinking in everywhere you walk that you're standing in front of God?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Remind me your name?
Sarah.
Sarah? It's a lot of Sarahs and Sarahs in this room. It's a
popular name.
It's a popular name. Sarahs. How many Ariels are in this room? Two Ariels. That's what I noticed also. Okay, good. You're also Ariel? I don't think so. So you think that Dalfnet, you're always supposed to think that Hashem is in front of you, in your presence, Sarah. So, yeah, Sarah, you Lindsay?
I think it was the opposite.
Yeah.
What you said. That, like, not that God is where you let him in, but like, God is everywhere, and like you're leaving him out if you don't feel that.
Aha. Uh-huh. Meaning you should. That's the flip side.
Yeah.
That's the flip side. So I want to get back to what you said in a second, but just to connect that, I remember there's a poem by Elizabeth Barrett Browning that the whole world is aflame with fire, but only he, or every bush is aflame with fire. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. Meaning everywhere, there's a burning bush everywhere. So God is everywhere. It's he who sees that takes off his shoes and recognizes the Kedusha. You know, sort of that sense. Okay, but let's go back. Is God in front of us at every moment? Dalifnei mi'ata omed. So there's a great pasuk, Achat Shoalti Me'et Hashem. I never know what nifta to use in this place, but Achat Shoalti Me'et Hashem Oso Avakesh. Shifti Beves Hashem Kol Yemei Chayai, to dwell in the house of God all the days of my life. Lachsus Benoam Hashem Ulevaker Behechalo. To visit his temple. And it's a little bit of a contradiction. On the one hand, you're supposed to want to shift the Beves Hashem Kol Yemei Chayai, every moment, to be in the house of Hashem. And then on the other, he talks about just visiting the Heichal. So how could it be both? And I think about it, and it really cuts a little bit about what your image is of Hashem. But how much of Hashem is Dalif Ne'amiyata Omeid? Is it always, how paralyzing is that? If you think about it, you know, like the Jerusalem syndrome, like the what happens, how people get crazy and when they live in Jerusalem, in the old city. Nothing wrong with living in the old city. But if when you're living in the, I mean, mamish, in the presence of God, you know, even though Hashem wants you to play ball and also have, like, how do you, like, they have basketball courts there and they're, like, they're right by, you know, but they have to get accustomed. It's their normal life. But I'm saying it's like, if you have a sense of Dalif Ne'mi Ata Omeid, and again, it could be, well, this is my favorite time. Schedule. But if you have a sense, and it really depends on what you're thinking of Hashem. you know? So how much does that also paralyze you? Like, in the balance of Ishtadlus and Amuna, you know, can you be out and going and doing your thing and making a difference in the world, doing good things? If you're standing in front of God and we're nothing and insignificant and like, oh my gosh. So is Dalif Nehemiah Tomei when you're in the Beit Knesset and in Shul and when you're out of Shul and you're in the world, is still there. The sum, obviously, it's not that Hashem, I said he again, but Hashem is gone. But is it the same, is forefront of your mind? So I asked, there's a guy I mentioned to you last time, I asked this guy who's a, like, the super successful business guy, who's like one of my new superheroes. And I've always assumed this, like, that you sort of need shifti bevet Hashem, but also levakar behechalo. And it's when, it's like it shifts. So he said that Hashem is always with him. So I said, so, but not in the forefront of your mind, like in your, because you're at work and you're doing. He said, no, 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 in the forefront of my mind. I'm like, this guy's like so amazing. I don't know how he does. So maybe it is in the forefront. I don't know. Like he's, maybe it could be. Maybe it's like that. You know, I don't know. But I think the questions of what is Hashem, when is Hashem, where is Hashem in our lives, transforms our experiences in any way. I mean, the level of Ishtadlus versus Amuna, you know, your experience of being loved and being treasured, a sense of support and base throughout your lives, that there's always, you know, it doesn't always mean that it's going to be good, everything's going to be great, but you're never alone. You know, all of these, you know, it's these conversations that we sort of assume, we never have, or we don't have enough, that form the basis for a rich, multi-layered, nourishing, profound connection with the Rabbono Shel Olam, which is absolutely essential and transformative. And I think it emerges a lot from this week's Parsha. Like, this is like the turn where you start seeing, like, oh, it's not just Hashem Yishpuchama. It's also Ani Hashem Rofecha. You know, and then you start thinking about, well, when, where, what, like, how does that all work together? You know, and my bracha, you know, as we, too, is that these are, it's not just these conversations, but this relationship, you know, is the, develops and grows and matures and furthers, as it will bring you the greatest joy and greatest nechama throughout all of your times. And that's the promise of Hashem. Thank you so much for being here. I look forward to... I don't know, we have a couple more. We're going to...